morning, Mr. Phelps. Before he died last year, Premier Kirkoska gave his daughter Anna a secret document containing the names of men within his government who privately favored friendly relations with the West. Word has reached us through diplomatic channels that Anna and her brother Alexei wish to defect. We know this is a plot devised by Alexei to acquire the document and at the same time capture American intelligence agents, thereby embarrassing the West. In spite of this trap, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to get the document and bring Anna Kirkoska to safety. As always, should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Jim.
Saturday, the 23rd of March, 2013. Is Android the reason we can't have nice things anymore? Astronaut Neil Armstrong, what a liar.
He landed on the moon, didn't he?
No, he didn't.
Right.
No, he's a liar, and everyone in the NASA is in the NASA, I think I'm just going to call it the NASA, but they're all liars. They never landed on the moon.
And butt crack, can you ever have too much? This is the 9 p.m. bus ride. Right, there's three things we need to get out of the way before we get into the guts of this episode. One, there is no bus ride. There was going to be. Exactly a week ago, I started recording this episode, and it sounded like this. Yeah, it's not 9 p.m. yet, at least as I'm recording this, but it will be by the time you hear it. Provided the world's not destroyed in some accidental nuclear holocaust, if only. But here's seven words that will ensure your heart will crumble to dust and be scattered by the unrelenting wind. Buses replace trains between Central and Penrith. Yes, as I start recording this episode, it's a beautiful sunny Saturday in Sydney, indeed right across the Sydney Basin, the area known as the Cumberland Plain, I think it's called, and in the Blue Mountains too, and it would have been the perfect day for taking a mid-afternoon train back to Wentworth Falls, speeding through Sydney's western suburbs, gazing idly out the window as everything blurs past, ideas forming and reforming and taking notes. All in all, it would have been a lovely, creative afternoon. But no, buses replace trains between Central and Penrith. So I'm crammed in a pokey bus seat. There's no room to properly open the laptop. And in any case, working on a laptop is impossible on this jerky traffic-avoiding stop-start hill ride to oblivion. Or at least the urban planning political strategy selling equivalent of oblivion on the banks of the Nepean River. An anticipated pleasure has been transformed into a claustrophobic, prole-filled nightmare, and this really shits me off. But that's wrong. It sounds crap. It sounds almost cheerful there. I mean, City Rail rail bus meets Stockholm Syndrome or something. So, yeah, fuck that off. Yeah, let's wait a week, start again, and here we are. Two, Kevin Rudd. Now, if you've only half listened to what I do here, you might have imagined that I'd rant at you about the arsehattery of the Australian Labor Party leadership battle that wasn't this week. You know, the one that happened on Thursday. But there is no Rudd ride either. There might have been, but almost exactly a year ago, I recorded another episode and it sounded like this. Is there one daily news outlet in this nation that hasn't fallen for this bullshit muppetry? Report actual news, you stupid cunts! But that's wrong. It sounds repetitive. I did it all a year ago. Edict number 19, if you want to look it up. At the beginning of this week, Julia Gillard was Prime Minister and Kevin Rudd was a backbencher who wasn't going to challenge for the leadership. And at the end of the week, 11 bazillion news words and images later, Julia Gillard is Prime Minister and Kevin Rudd is a backbencher who isn't going to challenge for the leadership. So net change, zero. And you wonder, you know, why I don't bother listening to the bullshit arsehattery that comes out of Canberra. Three, Home Creek 2011 Pinot Noir from Marlborough in New Zealand. Here in Wentworth Falls in the Blue Mountains, there's a bottle shop with the witty, witty name Divine. So it's D'VINE. So it's divine, as in wonderful, of the gods, and also divine of the vine in kind of franglais. Why am I explaining this really shit pun to you? Anyway, the chap there today said that if I were after a light red, and note the use of the subjunctive mood there, then while he normally steers away from the sub-$20 Pinots, I might like this one. It's around $14 a bottle. And I said I'd try it, and I said that if he were wrong, that I'd come back and stab him to death and curse his offspring unto the seventh generation. And he said, well, that was only fair. I mean, that's the kind of place Wentworth Falls is. So, this is the Home Creek 2011 Pinot Noir from Marlborough. He said to kind of chill it a little bit, which, given the warm day, I thought was a bit excessive. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, that's the trick you use to cover up the shit taste of a wine, but oh, look, it's not shit. So given all those things 1 to 3, let's start recording afresh. Okay, it's not 9 p.m. yet, but it will be by the time you hear this, provided the world isn't destroyed in some accidental nuclear holocaust, if only. Now, here's 7 words that will ensure your heart will crumble to dust and be scattered by the unrelenting wind. Buses replace trains between Central and Penrith. Well, as I started recording this episode, it was a beautiful sunny Saturday in Sydney, the area known as the Cumberland Plain, and in the Blue Mountains too. And indeed, a week later, it still is. It would have been, and today is, the perfect day for taking a mid-afternoon train back to Wentworth Falls, or indeed from Wentworth Falls down into Sydney, speeding through Sydney's western suburbs, gazing idly out of the window as they blur past ideas, forming and reforming and taking notes. All in all, a lovely, creative afternoon. But no, buses replace trains between Central and Penrith. And so I was crammed in a pokey... Well, I was. I'm not now. This doesn't make any sense. Anyway, let me tell you about something else that shits me off. The Android operating system, and specifically the back button. I mean, what the fuck is that even about? Is it the most inconsistent piece of shit in the entire history of computing ever? Or is it merely a disaster? Anyone who's used Android for any period will, you know, nod their head with the following scenario. Good morning, Mr. Briggs. Welcome to Android. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to predict what the fuck the back button will actually do today. Yeah, I mean, if Dan Briggs did take on that mission, he'd end up just putting a bullet into the head of every Android developer he finds, and rightly so. Can any Android developer point me to the documentation that explains how the back button is actually meant to fucking well work? Well, according to someone on Twitter whose real name is an anagram of show rust, the back button ends the current activity and or moves back to the previous activity. He even sent me a link to some alleged documentation, which I haven't read, of course, because, you know, who knows, it could well contain some so-called facts or evidence that would completely destroy this narrative. So ignoring that, Mr. Southers, if that really is your name, let's say I'm doing a bunch of stuff in an Android app, and for whatever reason, I find myself at the app's home screen again. If I now press the back button, supposedly what? It retraces my steps within the app and or exits the app. I mean, brilliant. Just fucking brilliant, Android. You've just introduced quantum uncertainty at the macro level. Nobel fucking prize. Hurrah. For fuck's sake, Android, what is the ISO standard flowchart symbol for Andor? Where in your favourite programming language is this supposed and/or operator, and what does it even do? This makes no fucking sense whatsoever, Mr. Alleged Southers. Hang on. I see, Mr. Southers, on your so-called website that you admit in public that you program in Ruby. Ruby. A, quote, programming language, unquote, that doesn't even have a proper syntax specification. I mean, the actual syntax of Ruby is whatever the current version of the code happens to do. So anyone who wants to write code with predictable outcomes has to know how parsers work so they can reverse engineer Ruby's source code, and they have to check every revision of that code to make sure things haven't changed. I mean, what fucked up Humpty Dumpty approach to programming language design is this? I mean, words say whatever I say they mean. Jesus wept. I mean, today on Which Is Worse, we ask, which is worse, Ruby on Rails or pedophilia? Speaking of fucked up, that pseudonymous Irish cunt Frank Sting said, Android is open. Developers get to choose their own adventure with the back button, he told me. Well, yeah, okay, choose your own goddamn adventure, Frank Sting. Choose whatever adventure you like. Just remember that adventures can sometimes end very badly, very badly indeed. Now, let's not dwell too long on whether that just there was or wasn't a threat. I think the more important question is what sort of world we'll end up in when every Android developer, and there are hundreds of thousands of them, anyone who can randomly mash enough buttons on their keyboard to download the Android Software Developers Kit, and that's not exactly a high professional standard to achieve, is it? People whose psychology is that heady startup culture mix of passion, dopamine, Red Bull, and comprehensive solipsistic Ayn Rand cunt. When every single one of them is choosing their own adventure, how the fuck are any of us poor users meant to know or be able to predict what will actually happen when we press a button? Like the back button. I mean, hang on, I'll show you something. Look, hang on a sec. I'll be right back. Just a sec. Visualize. Just getting... Okay. So, hang on. Headphones back on. Right, so what I have here is the Samsung Galaxy S3 and here the LG Optimus G smartphone. Now, if you have a look... Oh, hang on. Yeah, all right. Audio podcast. But the point is, if I hold up the Samsung phone, down at the bottom, the back button is on the right, the menu button is on the left. If I hold up the LG smartphone, the back button is on the left, the menu button is on the right. Now, this is madness. This is Android. Now, freelance asshole Finn in Exile Juha Saarinen reckons I'm making a mistake here, that I should talk about these apps being beta. Ah, yes. The world of continuous beta. Translation, it means, oh, yeah, look, all this is getting too hard and I just couldn't be asked anymore. I mean, that's going to be the epitaph for our digital age, isn't it? Perpetual beta. I think we need a late-night infomercial for this. Is your software development process an embarrassing, ramshackle piece of shit? Call it open. That makes it a feature. Yeah, right. So here's today's thought experiment. The New South Wales government could get the Android development community to rework and run CityRail. Achievement unlocked! Yeah, maybe no. Who was Benedict and what, precisely, was his interest in eggs? Last episode, you heard the thoughts of a completely rational man who I met in a pub on the conspiracy of oil companies that forces us to use alternating current. Now, if you haven't listened to that yet, do so because it really opened my eyes. Well, I've decided that this talking to people malarkey should be a thing, the thing that you're about to listen to, in fact. And today's person for talking to is Aubrey, who I met when I bought a couple of T-shirts from him in San Francisco last year. Weird Coast T-shirts is the label. And this conversation was recorded just a few weeks before the US presidential election. So obviously America and its politics featured. And since America is capitalism personified, or perhaps nationified, there's a few breaks in the conversation to allow capitalism to flourish unfettered. Now, this is a new segment in the podcast, and I don't really know what I'm going to be doing with it, except that it'll be about talking to people that I run into, wherever it is that I happen to be and they happen to be, going about their business. So we're here at Ferry Plaza, this is called, in San Francisco, isn't it, Aubrey? Ferry
Justin Herman, Herman Plaza. Yeah.
And Aubrey is selling the T-shirts he makes down in kind of a maker's market that's down here. And it's always pretty busy on the weekends. It's a Labor Day weekend. It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny day today. And we're going to try and recreate a conversation we had the other day about how terrible America is.
Well, I never said it was terrible. I never said it. I wouldn't say that. I don't think that it is. I think that it's doing the best that it can, considering what it is. I mean, I think it's a poster child for the rest of the world, kind of a kumbaya, kind of like multicultural, like everybody holding hands, kind of what's the word? I mean, it's like the logo for the world. It's kind of like, hey, you know,
Land of the
freedom and right.
This is the model democracy.
Right, freedom and democracy and big business are like gonna work hand in hand to make this awesome utopia kind of thing. I think it's built to look and be that way, but in fact, that's not really what it's here for. You know, it has a different agenda.
And what is that different agenda?
Well, it's big. It's just business. It's always business. So it's just like figuring out. Yeah, exactly. So I'm just like I'm like a very horrible example of a mafioso don. I'm like, you know, just only have my 10x10 space that I control, and you know, I only have so much product that I move, and it's, you know, I mean, basically, I don't know. It seems like everyone. I mean, and this is kind of like a cruel twist of fate. I'm like watching my daughter start to figure this out too. How do you incorporate your life and your soul into like the capitalist structure?
Hello, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
If you need any help, just let me know.
How much are these?
It's $20 for one and two for 30.
I've just incorporated the capitalist structure into my interview.
And he did. And obviously, you know, I have no problem with Aubrey trying to sell a few T-shirts to pay the bills. You know, at least he's got some income happening. You know, he could be a lot worse off. Welcome to America in the current decade.
No.
Now, an awful lot of Americans are not paying their bills at the moment. Because
right.
Unemployment's at an all-time, not all-time high, obviously.
No.
There was a thing called the Great Depression.
Right. Even the 70s had a higher, I think. Yeah,
that
unemployment
was a pretty
rate
tough
than
time
here,
as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're down here. Okay, it's the long weekend. We got a lot of people who are traveling. They got money to spend down at the markets here. But, you know, I this is as busy as I've ever seen it down here.
Yeah, no, it's you know, Americans are spoiled pigs and we like to whine. I mean, like, this is just basically, like, any things you hear about, like, a horrible economy in America. I mean, really, until, like, you know, people are, you know, really like doing the whole Joad thing, you know, riding around the back of their truck in mass. I mean, you don't see a lot of homeless families in America. You do occasionally, but they get rid of them, you know, somehow. But I just don't think it's that bad, you know.
How did you end up down here selling shirts?
I was a horrible person to work with, and I was a horrible boss. And I said, I don't want to foist my, you know, personality on anyone else anymore and make them have to. Hello.
Hi.
Ready to make a decision?
What size? Do you guys have like mediums in this one?
Yeah, sure.
Fucking capitalism, and it comes in different sizes. Anyway, at that very moment, while Aubrey was doing the capitalism thing, my audio recorder decided to stop working. So that sentence there, plus the one I'm currently saying, are to explain why there's now a really weird context change as we jump back to the interview.
My recorder here is being a pain in the ass. It just keeps stopping for random reasons.
Maybe it doesn't like the interview.
Well, it's Japanese. It's these goddamn Americans.
Maybe let's hear a little more about the Japanese economy, a little less about this weird wingnuts idea of American.
Speaking of weird wingnuts, okay. Do you watch the political stuff on TV that's been happening during this
campaign? I only watch it when I'm jogging in the gym. I really don't watch it at all. I'm completely unplugged from mainstream media. I took a class at SF State, and there was this brilliant, very leftist professor who clued me into the actual nature of news by pointing out that it's actually just a way to sell insurance and medicine. All I had to do to figure out any television genre is look at the advertising around it. And in fact, actually, I did a show called The God and Devil Show that was on the internet. It was through Warner Brothers. And at that point, I realized how much, and this is something that not a lot of people know, you probably know to a degree, is that how much advertisers dictate entertainment, which is kind of depressing because they're like, well, you know, we don't like this joke. And they will come in actually and tell you they don't like this joke. They'll like look through a script and go, this joke is, you know, anti-insulation, you know, and we have a big contract with this insulation company, so you got to get rid of it, you know? And it's that peculiar.
I mean, things I've noticed watching TV news this morning, and the thing I notice about American news readers, it's always very strident. It's always very fear is in the air. Yeah. There was a thing.
Oh, how's it in Australia? What is it like?
Well, it's a bit more pulled back. It's a matter of fact.
Really?
You know, it's not. There was an accident on Interstate Highway. There was an accident today. They're just telling you. They're not warning you.
A tonality is just like, the facts. And kind of more of a, like, the classic, what was the American guy who, Edward Murrow?
Edward Murrow.
Okay, Murrow. He created that whole kind of
sense of urgency.
Oh, he did. I thought he had a little more stoic center.
The wrong way around.
He had a little more just the facts, kind of like, almost like, like Dragnet, just the facts, ma'am, kind of thing, yeah.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid siren. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields. A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance, one single beam sweeping the sky above me now. People are walking along quite quietly. We're just at the entrance of an air raid shelter here, and I must move this cable over just a bit so people can walk in. There's another searchlight just square behind Nelson's statue. Here comes one of those big red buses around the corner. Double-deckers they are, just a few lights on the top deck. In this blackness, it looks very much like a ship that's passing in the night, and you just see the porthole.
And then it's become very strident, it's true.
But what was interesting, now, all right, there were some stories together, and a story about a orphaned bear whose parents were killed in a fire in Idaho.
That's got everything.
Yeah.
Are they gay?
Were they gay? I don't know. The bear was a gay terrorist, right? Gay terrorist, yeah. Yeah. But like, it was then way down the news bulletin we heard, and this ex-Marine who had tweeted, is it normal to want to kill all of your colleagues at work or all of your co-workers?
Oh, and he got in trouble?
2 years later, he took a pistol and an AK-47 down to the mall where he worked and shot two people before he shot himself.
Sometimes those guys venting are actually, there's not enough vent, I guess.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, is it normal to want to kill all of your co-workers? I mean, most of people,
yes. I say yes.
That's normal.
You can put me down for a yes on that.
I'm just trying to work out how an ex-Marine who's got an AK-47 and a pistol only manages to take out two people. What does it say about American prowess?
It does. It really does. That's embarrassing. I think with an AK-47, he could have easily killed up to 16 people. That's embarrassing. Mm. Wow. Mm.
Maybe
wow.
That's why they ran the orphan bear up higher in the news.
Orphan bear. Oh yeah, I was talking to you the other day about the tree thing. I'm like, here's how American media works: how they'll highlight a guy with who a tree falls on him, and then on the little crawls on below it, They'll have, like, you know, and billions, you know, are repaid from banks who ripped you guys off. You know, they downplay.
Yeah, don't look at that. Look at the shiny thing
look,
over here.
Look at
that
guy. Oh, tree. Look at this tree in the sky. You know trees. You know, guys, banks are confusing. Yeah. You don't want to know about that anyway. Yeah.
Speaking of people dying, Neil Armstrong, his funeral yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He landed on the moon, didn't he?
No, he didn't.
Right.
No, he's a liar, and everyone in the NASA is in the NASA. I think I'm just going to call it the NASA. They're all liars. They never landed on the moon. There's, like, a ton of really good documentaries on the internet that make it really clear. I mean, here's how I know, personally, that man never landed on the moon. It's really... I'll go back to the primate roots. There's no way a man would land on the moon and not leave some sort of visible marker, some sort of trace that you're going to, like, see from, like, Earth to go, like, hey, yeah, we were really there. And when the Chinese land there in a couple of years, because they're getting ready to land on the moon, they'll make that quite clear that America is fucking loads of shit and we never landed on the moon.
There's laser reflectors up there that you can point lasers at and bounce them off and measure them. Astronomers have done that.
Is that true? I don't know.
That was part of the experiment.
I don't know.
I mean, I watched it on TV.
Oh, it must be true then. Yeah. If it was on TV, then I must be off.
I noticed.
I just don't see, like, why aren't we doing anything else? I mean, why has anything else gone on since then?
I thought it was because it costs shitloads of money.
Shitloads of money, and it doesn't do it. Well, that's why I think it's a great money laundering thing. I think it's a huge money laundering fucking thing because they don't actually do anything other than, you know, tell everyone to shut the hell up and stay on plan. You know, I don't think anyone's ever landed. I think they've gone into the atmosphere, that kind of thing, but they've never landed on the moon's, like, very complicated. I don't think that, like, I still don't think we could do that. You know, all the stuff you'd have to do to, like, and how do they get off of the moon? And, like, why when they land on the moon, when they have several things on the show, like, they'll show the guys, like, the little thing that, whatever that, what's that lander?
The lunar
lander thing.
Yeah.
And it'll be there, and it has no crater blast underneath it at all. It just, like, smoothly just kind of just glide. It just lands there like that, just like all, like Mary Poppins with an umbrella. Is that how it goes down? I don't think so. I'm sure it takes a little bit more than that.
But surely, to cover up a conspiracy, that would have to have involved so many people.
Right.
Because there were people all around the world who thought they were working on this.
But think about it, like, the greater good. Okay, so put yourself in that position as a scientist who's doing that, and then you realize it's like, and maybe there was a point where they were really trying to do it, and they realized they couldn't do it in the timeline they wanted to, like, you know, have it, that JFK prediction of having it done by, you know, the end of the decade. And once he realized that, like, you know, it's like, it comes down to, like, it was a huge, you know, national security issue. You could not. I mean, it's a huge lie, but you can't fucking break out of that lie. You're gonna ruin the whole country you live in. You know, it'd be like, it'd make the people who sold the A bomb, you know, back in the 40s look like, you know,
the Rosenberg.
Right, the Rosenberg. It'd make them look like chopped liver. You know, so they had. There's no way you could come out of that. There's no way you could ever admit that.
I noticed you're wearing a Thor's hammer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Scandinavian, so yeah. And this, since I'm very contrary in our times in America, it's very popular to be whatever culture you are, to actually have identification with another culture. So to be contrary, I actually enjoy the culture that I'm from.
okay, a weird kind of contrary.
And that's why I do it.
Okay, finally, that first Tuesday in November, who's going to win?
I'm voting for I want to see Barack win, but I want to see Mitt Romney. I want to see his hair, Mitt Romney's hair.
His hair.
Yeah, just his hair. It's like the vice president. I don't want to really see Romney do anything, but get rid of Biden, put Romney's hair in, because it's just good hair. You know, the rest of him's not so good, but he has very good hair.
Aubrey, thank you. Enjoy the rest of this sunny day, and may your t-shirts sell well.
Thank you.
Sadly, America did not end up with Mitt Romney's hair as vice president. A tragic loss, in my opinion. The t-shirts Aubrey was selling are from Weird Coast T-shirts. There's a link on the website.
Now, a week ago when I first started recording this episode, I would have told you about the waiter who brought me a coffee because she was A, a backpacker, and B, displaying far too much butt crack while I was trying to eat my goddamn breakfast. And if I had been recording this episode a week ago, I would have said, I think this calls for an edict. And then you would have heard a fanfare like this. But it's a week later now, and I simply couldn't be asked. So all I'm going to do is say, end of episode. Check 1, 2. Well, that's all for the edict for now. If you'd like to validate your existence as a worthwhile member of the human species by commenting on this episode, go to the website. If you'd like to leave an audio comment, which will allow me to listen to your soothing tones over and over and over again until the long-awaited and oh-so-sticky climax, Skype Distilgerian or phone Sydney, +61 2 8011 3733. The next edict will be whenever I bloody well get around to it, because this is the 9pm edict.
Now, because of that fire, there was one resident who lost their home and may never see their mother again. Robin O'Day now introduces us to Boo Boo, the black bear cub.
In the charred remains of the Mustang fire, a four-month-old orphan black bear cub was spotted, clinging to a tree. Crews pulled him down, and that's when they discovered second-degree burns on all four of his paws.
He was just cowering in the corner, just watching everybody, and he looked a little bit dazed, too, and I assume because of he was a little bit dehydrated and hadn't had food for a while.
Crew members fondly named the black bear cub Boo Boo. He's now being treated around the clock at the Wildlife Health Lab in Caldwell, Idaho, and is expected to be okay.
All his wounds have been thoroughly cleaned out, and I just got off the phone a few minutes ago with Dr. Drew, and he indicated that his wounds, his burn wounds, look much better, and his prognosis for the little guy is quite good.
Boo Boo is not out of the woods just yet. In addition to the throbbing pain and the possibility of infection, there's the trauma from the fire and no mother bear to console him.
Probably been a scary time for him, because this is the first time in his life that he's been away from his mother, and she's all he's ever known. So it's hard to say, but I imagine he's a little bit lonely.
Depending on how much human contact he's had, Boo Boo may be released back to the wild or may become a zoo bear.
It'll just kind of depend on his behavior once he's placed in an enclosure where he can behave more like a wild bear, and he'll be observed, and that determination will be made.
What is not up for debate is the big spirit of this little cub.
Bears, like most wildlife, they're pretty darn tough animals, so I got a good feeling that he's going to be all right.
In Missoula, Robin O'Day for Montana's News Station.
Right now they're looking for a rehabilitation facility for the bear, and once that spot is determined, we'll let you know about his prognosis.
Good luck, Jim.